It's time to bring you inside the Toronto-Waterloo Innovation Corridor. Join host Todd Cooney and co-host Dean Mariani as they chat with CEOs, founders, and disruptors, some of the most influential people in this tech ecosystem. This is the Startups to Scale-Ups podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Startups to Scale-Ups. We are sitting down today with serial entrepreneur and one of my favorite tech influencers here in town, Mr. Tim Ellis. Tim is the CEO of Cadence Venture Partners, former CEO of the Accelerator Center, mentor to many, friends to all. Sit back, kick back, and enjoy his wisdom. So this is Todd Cooney, Dean Mariani with the Office Corridor Group. We are sitting down with Tim Ellis, who we figure out is the pioneer of the incubator system here in KW. So thank you very much for sitting down with us today. Your story is pretty incredible. You've been here, you know, since the 70s as a young child, saw kind of the ecosystem that was then, and you're a major reason on where we are today. So why don't you give us a brief background on kind of your history growing up in KW?
Yeah, sure. You know, my path is not, it's a very curvy straight line. I started off in the automotive industry here in the late 80s, early 90s. And I always aspired to own an automotive dealership, and I started on a career path to try to accomplish that. But I got derailed partway through. It was actually going really well, but I met a young tech entrepreneur who had majority interest in five or six tech companies in town, and had the opportunity to sort of get to know him and work alongside him. And I transitioned from automotive into tech in the, you know, 94 timeframe, when Communitech was actually just getting started and the ecosystem was just starting to develop. There was, you know, maybe 50 to 100 tech companies at that point. I remember the roadmap back then. You know, you could easily count the number of tech companies on the roadmap, which today, you know, would be impossible to do because we don't even know all of them. But anyway, so I started in working with this gentleman, five or six tech companies, investor relations, raising capital for those companies. And then, like most entrepreneurs, I got tired of doing it for somebody else and decided I would do it for myself. So I created a network of people at the university, smart, brilliant people, inventing really cool things, which I could never do. And then the financiers in Toronto and elsewhere around the world that had the capital to launch these ideas. So I created these two disparate networks, and I became the bridge between the two, because back then they wouldn't talk to each other. You know, the inventors didn't really want to talk to people with money and you know, vice versa.
Right.
The bankers didn't want to come into the universities and search the hallways for ideas. So anyway, I started a career based on being the go-between between those two things. And I was involved over, you know, a decade or so with five or six startups myself. And I did, you know, well-known startup in town called Handshake VR. It was technology that was, it turns out, probably 15, 20 years too early, but it was really game-changing technology that eventually will, you know, find its way into, you know, mainstream lives of everybody. But again, it was too early. And then I got a call from one of my investors, Tim Jackson, who was at the Accelerator Center at the time on the board. And it was not long after I left Handshake, and he asked me what I was doing, and I thought he meant like at the moment. And I said, well, I'm actually fishing right now. And he said, no, I mean in general. What's next? What are you going to do next? I said, well, I haven't really decided. And he said, I need you to take a look at this nonprofit that I'm involved with. And I said, Tim, you're my VC, and everything you told me for the last 4 years was about profit. What's nonprofit? He says, it's a really cool center for entrepreneurship to support startups in our community and try to help get them what they need to increase their chances of success. So that started what, you know, became a career in incubation and acceleration. It was really the beginning of it in globally. There wasn't a lot of it happening, so there were no guidelines or parameters by which you had to follow to build an incubator. Tom right. Kaur was the CEO at the time, who is now the CEO of Ontario Centers of Excellence. Is a great, great guy to work with. He threw me the keys to the Accelerator Center, literally to my office. There's a computer. Go build something cool. which is exactly the environment that I work well within. I don't color within the lines. I don't like when there's lines to color inside of.
So you came in 2007. You had a blank canvas. You set up shop as a COO. So talk a little bit about like what kind of companies were there, who you were going after, and,
sure.
and kind of the major tech companies that you actually ended up helping
for sure.
You know, grow and expand.
Sure. So at the time, I remember there were 17 companies in the Accelerator Center. It was about a year old, so it had launched in 2006. This was 2007 when I joined. They, like other businesses, had a bottom line they had to meet. So the Accelerator Center wasn't necessarily full of what would be, you know, real tech startups. There was a bunch of different companies that didn't fit. There were some large companies that really had no place there, and all they were really doing is recruiting people away from the startups.
Right.
So I went to Tom Core with a plan to like kick out 9 of the 17 companies, and one of which was a big company, like Microsoft. And
fairly big, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Tom said, yep, let's do it. And then I had a stack of applicants that wanted to come in behind that. So the first thing we did is sort of turn the facility over and move out the companies that weren't real tech startups or were stagnant, and brought in a wave of really good, strong companies. But in that first group of the remaining 8, MyoVision was one.
Which is an incredible success story here
Curtis
in town.
McBride.
Curtis McBride,
brilliant,
yeah.
Brilliant person. He's done amazing, gone on to do amazing things. But, you know, MyoVision was really the first, the company that we used to create the example for all the content to follow. And in fact, one of the things that the Accelerator Center is best known for is their what they call in-house mentor program. So if you look at the Accelerator Center resources, everybody is an executive in residence or EIR. And that's like the C-level strategic advisor.
Right.
But then they have that other layer that most organizations don't have, and that's called the in-house mentors. And there are people that are like marketing, sales, finance, IP, like CTOs. So it's a layer of VPs that you would, you know, anybody in a large company would have. So we created this team of people, and it all came out of me listening to a conversation in the hallway. Curtis McBride was talking to Kevin Bedill and Tony Bridgepaul, his two co-founders in MyoVision, and he had just attended a session up in the CBET space where Kevin Hood, who was a sales and marketing guru, had given a one-to-many educational session. Curtis attended it. And I heard Curtis outside my door talking to Tony and Kevin, and they said, so how was it? And they would step out of their office because it was full of people working to have these conversations, and they were in the hallway by my door. And I heard Curtis say, it was truly amazing. He said, you know, I learned in one session that we have to sell stuff, and we have to sell it tomorrow, because they kept engineers will make things better and better and better and better, and it's never really quite right.
Right.
And he said, we got to get our product to market tomorrow. He said, my only regret is I don't get more of that guy's time. And a light bulb went on in my head that why don't I figure out how to go fundraise and get the money to buy some of this guy's time and bring him in a day or two a week to work with all my, because it was a transformational experience, a transformational moment for Curtis McBride and MyoVision.
Right.
So that started the whole in-house mentor thing. So I did that. I got some public funding, got Kevin Hood to come in a day a week, and he started working with all of our startups. And he had that kind of impact on all our startups. And then he helped me recruit, well, what do we need next? Well, we need a finance person. We need this. We
so
need
you brought in all the necessary tools.
Like seven, I think it's seven or so in-house mentors now, and created this little team. And that was all wonderful. But then what we lacked was the communications amongst all of them. So you didn't get one mentor saying to a company, you should do this. And then the next mentor coming in, you know, an hour later, giving them conflicting advice. So
right.
we had to put tools in to track their progress and to, so the mentors could see what each other were saying.
So you in-house were, you know, looking at the metrics, figuring out exactly how to get this company from kind of stage A to stage B.
Yeah. And in fact, MyoVision, again, I sat in their first board meeting. So they had taken investors in, Jim Estill, Mark Moore, and a few others.
Right.
And they went into the first official board meeting, and MyoVision came in with no documentation, no paperwork, no presentation, no financials, nothing. And I sat in the meeting with them. Mike Stork was one of them. And it was a very awkward moment because here's a board who's used to being a board and usually seeing packages of board information given to them. But MyoVision had no idea what a board was or what you were supposed to do. And I sort of felt somewhat embarrassed myself because I thought I should have educated these folks on what you do in your first board meeting. So what we did then is that led to our tracking system, and that's on a quarterly basis, all of our companies have to meet with their with a mentor team. So not really a board, because you know, a lot of them don't have a board, but we created our own little board, and then we taught these companies how to prepare materials and report to those mentors as though they were a board. So when they do get in a situation where they have an official board, they're ready to go. So everything just sort of, it was out of necessity that we created what's called the Accelerator Program, and it's now being licensed, you know, to communities all throughout Canada.
And international.
And
right?
International,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, like one thing that we can touch upon quickly is, you know, University of Wollongong.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell the story about why you ended up there,
sure.
How you ended up there, and kind of your relationship with David Johnson before you moved on to be GG.
Yeah, for sure. So as Waterloo experienced, you know, global success, or we became recognized globally to have one of the leading startup ecosystems in the world, what it did is it brought international delegations from every reach, or you know, every corner of the world to Waterloo, Kitchener-Waterloo, and Waterloo region, and they would tour through all the various assets and facilities. And University of Wollongong, which is Wollongong is about an hour and a half south of Sydney, Australia, they came, and their vice chancellor president came and spent some time with our vice chancellor president at the time, David Johnston. And one of the stops on the tour was the Waterloo Accelerator Center. And the team from Wollongong saw the Accelerator Center, and they basically said, we want to do this in Wollongong. So David Johnston tapped me on the shoulder and said, would you mind going over there and helping them? You know, and you, if you knew David Johnston or know David Johnston, you don't say no to that.
It's tough to say no to that, yeah. Man. Yeah,
he's just so inspiring that you could hardly wait to go do it, no matter what the circumstances.
Right.
And it's Australia, so I was obviously interested to go. So we put together the arrangements for me to go for almost a month the first time I went, and it was all through the Waterloo Accelerator Center. So you know, it was done through the Accelerator Center. Sent me over for a month, and you know, we arranged a bunch of meetings with academics, current entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, government, all levels and various levels of government, and we spent a few weeks trying to decide if you know, what was there. And in these conversations, I'd never heard of Wollongong, and I can only imagine nobody else, you know, that might listen to this would ever heard of Wollongong. So I said to them, you know, like, we're known for the BlackBerry, right? You just tell people, oh, yeah, we invented the BlackBerry, and immediately you got global attention. So I said to them, have you ever invented anything that people might know of? Is there anything ever come out of this university? 30,000 engineers, you've got to think there's some pretty smart ones in there.
So to put that in perspective, like just shy of the size of Waterloo, but
yeah.
All engineers.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, all engineers. So they kind of scratched their head and looked at me sort of funny, and then all of a sudden they said, oh, like Wi-Fi? And I said, like, you mean like the internet Wi-Fi? Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah. You invented it here. And they said, yeah. And I thought, oh, no way. So I Googled it, and it does. It's the researcher at University of Wollongong invented Wi-Fi. So anyway, we went on to say, all right, well, then let's promote the community. And we started putting together a plan for them of creating activity. I didn't recommend they build the Accelerator Center first off. I said, what you need to do is start to have some clubs and some entrepreneurship support things. And they did exactly what I suggested. I went back a year later, spent another month, made more recommendations, and they executed flawlessly, which ultimately led to us pitching their federal government for funding. And they got just shy of $20 million to build a beautiful accelerator center. Our research park is nice,
yeah,
but it's their research park is on the ocean.
Better views.
Beautiful trees, a view of the ocean. Like, it's amazing. So they built this wonderful center, and now all of a sudden they've created a reason for those 30,000 engineers that get their education to stay. So now there's a great startup support ecosystem there. And you know what? Their university, they were the ones who had the vision to execute. They're the ones who paid all the expenses for me to go over, and they're the ones who, their university is the one, you know, the organization that got behind the search. So now everybody over there, like, now
trying to replicate that, right?
Like, everybody jumped on, and yeah. It's a great thing. But truly, it was the university that did you know, push that elephant up the staircase at the beginning.
They saw the vision, right? You know, they saw the 30,000 students that are coming and going, you know, similar to kind of what we saw back in the day in our local tech system where, you know, we have the engineers, they'd go down to the valley, go down to other avenues where they would get jobs.
Exactly.
You know, now that we have, what is it, 2,000 plus startups in town here, plus all these incubators where they can, you know, foster and grow, they have no reason to leave.
Right.
Which is what
they move here. Now.
They move here now. That's right.
We used to just organically grow startups, but you know, when I was still CEO of the Accelerator Center, I would get venture capitalists from the Valley call me and say, "Can I send up some of my startups so you guys can grow them in Waterloo region?" You know, so that was sort of the start of us being a destination for startups as opposed to just organically growing them and then the numbers, you know, exponentially increase.
So, you know, obviously your story is incredible. I was joking about it earlier, but you're the godfather of tech. So with all the companies you work with, did you get to a point where you could, you know, see right away, like this company special or this CEO special, certain attributes.
You know, that's another good, I'll answer that sort of with a David Johnston story. So as we got busier at the Accelerator Center and you know, we had a stack of 25, 30, 40 companies always wanted to come in and life was really busy and we didn't have the funding, infinite funding to hire people to just continue to do what we did. We looked as a board at ways of automating some of what we did to make it less human capital intensive and a little bit more driven by whatever software tools, whatever you could do. And David Johnston, who was on the board, put his hand up as we were looking at this. I remember at the back of the boardroom, he put his hand up and our chair said, David, and he said, please promise me that you will never automate the intake process. Promise me that Tim will look at every startup that comes through here. Because you do, to answer your question now, you do develop a sense, and you're right about it not necessarily being the idea. You know, the Buffer Box guys, here's an example. The Buffer Box guys came in, and I remember sitting in the meeting thinking, these guys are destined to do something amazing. I'm not so sure about great big kiosks where you can pick up your package or not. I like the idea. I just thought it was going to be
a great
so
idea.
Cash intensive.
100%.
Put these boxes around the world. I just couldn't get beyond thinking, how do you scale that company? Mm-hmm. But I approved them because I knew those three people, if they abandoned their idea, they'd have another one or they would join another team at the Accelerator Center. So I do believe, no, I was wrong sometimes, but you know, I just knew Ted Livingston was destined for amazing things. Curtis McBride and the other founders of MyoVision. You can just sort of tell the DNA of those. I had other people come in to me and say, I remember two young graduates from the University of Waterloo come in and they were in the intake process and they said to me, we know everything we need to know to build the next BlackBerry. We just need a cool place to do it. Do you think they got in? No. Because it's the opposite. And then I've had people... good friend of mine now, Steve Baxo, wrote the code for Pickstream. So he built. So he had two engineering degrees, MBA, built and sold a company for $550 million. So if anybody had earned the right to feel that they didn't need the system, it would be him. And he came in and he said, and he had a startup at the Accelerator Center. And he said, yeah, you know what? I know what I do well, and I know what I don't do well. And I need the system to help me with what I don't do well. So you could see that, you know, eventually and it is hard to replicate or it is hard to automate. Like, how do you get that gut feel for ideas and for people? You know, you're right. You do develop a sense. And I really think the ability to draw on that sense and pick the right ones really helped the success of the center. And you know what? You'll pick wrong ones. And we were just really good at identifying that early and moving them out.
Mm-hmm. And you keep close tabs on them. So you have a complete understanding of where they are in the process. And there's no secrets, right?
No. And you know what? There's a lot of incubators or accelerators had timelines. Like, you can only be in here for 6 months or 1 year. We didn't. So we had, it's IntelliJoint now it's called.
Yep.
They were at the Accelerator Center for 5 years. Mm. Now, some might say, well, they should have failed. They should have only been through. But they're a medical device company. So what we did is we monitored their progress on a quarterly basis, and they kept moving things forward every quarter, every quarter, yeah, every quarter.
It takes more time to get
going. But you knew it took FDA approval. It took all kinds of regular.
Yeah, the obstacles for them in the healthcare.
Huge. Yeah. But they kept on being able to capitalize it. And now today they're one of our biggest success stories. But if you had a hard and fast, 12 months, 18 months, they wouldn't have been successful, at least not under our watch.
Yep.
And then we had companies like Magnet Forensics that came in, Adam Belsher and Jab.
Yeah, brilliant things.
Brilliant people.
Yeah.
And they came through under 18 months. They came in with two guys and left with like a team of 25 people. So there is no, you can't, but the two companies I would say are equally as important in our ecosystem.
Yeah.
But they're unique and they're different.
Yeah, so there's no formula. But is there any kind of specific advice that you give to all the startups, or is it so?
Yeah.
Just like we were talking about.
Yeah. You know what? Mostly the advice that I give the startups is if you're starting something or want to start a company, so that you can set your own hours and that be 30, forget it, because startups are 70, 80 hours, very low pay. It has to be a labor of love.
You have to love what you're doing. You have to be straight up passionate about it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's the people at the end of the day that truly are passionate about it that usually succeed at it. Mm-hmm. And you'll find most of the entrepreneurs don't start out to become very wealthy. It sometimes is a product of their success, but Ted Livingston, took $1 million off the table when he did his first venture financing with Union Square Venture Partners. I think they did a $10 million financing and a partner came to the table late that wanted to put $1 million in, and they had closed the round, but they really wanted this venture capitalist in because of their contacts. So the VCs that did close the round went to Ted and said, we'll let you do a secondary if you want to sell $1 million of your shares to bring this guy in. And he said, okay. And he drove a car that leaked in our parking lot, like oil everywhere, was an old piece of junk, wipers falling off of it. He took that $1 million and he gave the whole million to fund the Velocity.
Yep.
Pitch competition, which is still active today. Mm. So, there's a person who is in it for the end game, right? Not he could add $1 million in his pocket.
He's not about that. He's about the overall experience of life. You listen to him anytime he talks. It's incredible to kind of see his vision on the company as a whole. But, the culture that he's created there, and they're finally moving out of out of 412 there and getting some good space over at the Catalyst. It's
going
to be an exciting move for them and their company.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't we touch a little bit upon UW Velocity and your involvement there and kind of how that came about after the Accelerator Center and the success there.
Yeah, you know what? The Velocity story is a little funny. I hear it told today, and to be honest, the people telling it today really aren't telling it the way that it happened. And it's because I think they don't even maybe really know what happened. They sort of pick up at a certain point, but it did start as the dorm incubator is what it was sort of called. Sean Van Uten, he started the dorm incubator, but then the director at that time was Jesse Rogers. Jesse wanted to take some of the teams that were in the dorm, pull them out of the dorm, put them in a spot, and give them some programming, but not the full-blown accelerator program, because it's like turning a fire hydrant on. He wanted to give them a garden hose, right, of information, because that's all they could absorb at the time, and more would be detrimental. And I agreed with that. And he said, I can't convince anybody at the university that this is a good idea to move them out of this dorm and put them in, a facility. So I have no money. And I said, okay, I'll give you a 250 square foot suite. And I had a lineup of people that wanted to pay $1,200 a month for that suite. But I believed in what he was trying to do. And I said, okay, as soon as somebody moves out, I'll give you a suite. I won't worry about the revenue. You pick 14. So we picked four teams together, and we put them in the Accelerator Center. And Andrew Jackson, Tim's brother, worked for me, created some content, some programming, but not intense. Just enough to kind of validate their business idea and move them along through to the point where they could either say, yeah, there's an opportunity, or no, there's not. And two of them didn't, become anything, but two of them did become viable companies. So that kind of convinced the people over at the university that there was something there. And that's when they went into the tannery, into a small spot over at the tannery, and became, the true piece of Velocity. So, you know, it really started at the Accelerator Center Velocity, and we proved the concept. And it's a good example of the community working together. I knew at that time I was going to create my competition by creating, helping to create Velocity, but I didn't care. And some people said to me, are you nuts? You created Velocity. Now all these companies are moving out and going to Velocity. And now it doesn't matter because there's so many companies, they can fill every center.
Well, the synergy's there too, right? Like the best part about our ecosystem is, you know, people have failed before and people are willing to give the story on why they failed before to help out the next entrepreneur, right? It's the same with the ecosystems. Like you want to share your secrets, right? You share the incubator stories and what worked, what didn't, so that you help UW Velocity. You help the other groups that are trying similar to what you
When you look at it today, you know, Velocity's the largest and most successful, no charge. So Velocity's free for an entrepreneur to be in there. Accelerator Center, we charge companies. But Velocity's all funded by the university. So it's now the biggest no charge incubator in the world. And it's really just there because we didn't step on ourselves and on each other. We didn't try to maintain our territory. It's just like when the Community Tech Hub opened, I knew we were creating another place of competition for the Accelerator Center. But Community Tech retained the Accelerator Center, paid a retainer for us to manage the tech startups there. So again, it was Community Tech working with the Accelerator Center for the greater good.
Right.
And you know, today Community Tech, Accelerator, Velocity, they all work together. And companies will go back and forth between them because they might.
Some have hit all three. Like what,
some have.
You know, Nicoya Life Sciences is a perfect example of, you know, a company in town that did all three, which is phenomenal because they get a little bit of expertise at each location that they go, right?
They do. And at the end of the day, all we really care about is that we create the Nicoyas. You know, Vidyard started off over when Velocity moved out of the Accelerator Center and over to the Community Tech Hub. Vidyard was in that very first cohort. I remember doing the intake on what is now Vidyard, Redwoods Media at the time. And, you know, look at the story that they've created, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know,
it's got to be
$1 billion company.
Yeah, one of the best, right, to ever come out of this ecosystem here. It's just incredible to see kind of the changes that you've probably seen since 07 till today. You know, we're looking right now, a lot of stateside companies are looking at Canadian cities for safe haven, hiring developers as they can, looking for Canadian HQs. You've done that process. You've done it many, many times. Talk a little bit about the Zootli experience, bringing them from New York to KW and why you chose to do that.
Yeah, for sure. So two times now for the U.S. home-based company and then creating the engineering side here, both with Steve Axel both times. So a lot of what Americans do is they outsource their technology development. So Zootli was an on-demand app for moving anything in New York City mostly. So they outsourced the development of their technology to Egypt. They spent a couple $1 million and it was terrible. It was horrible technology and they didn't own it. And, you know, they were looking to raise capital to so they basically had an MVP, proof of concept app that they used in their own moving company to do on-demand moves for people. So they started to prove that it could work. And then, but they didn't own anything to try to raise money. And a tech company that doesn't own its own tech, that doesn't even have one tech person. So I said, oh, you really need to, you know,
you
create your own tech team.
Yeah, right.
But Manhattan's not the place to do it. Because space there, you know, you're in the space industry. You know what it was a square foot for the Zootli office there? $80 US.
Yeah, it's only gone up since then.
No parking.
Yeah. I don't believe in parking.
No parking anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so because it was right in Manhattan, right? So anyway, so we said, let's create the tech team in Kitchener-Waterloo. So, you know, I partnered with Steve Axel and we built a team of engineers, 10 or 12 people, and completely rebuilt the platform. So we didn't even use what they had, the legacy stuff that they had already built, because they built it on languages and whatnot that was already antiquated before they ever started to build it. So we completely rebuilt the team here. Zootli ultimately, you know, that whole on-demand thing, you know, it never really went anywhere. Couldn't get enough people interested in, you know, moving a desk or a chair on demand. But now we're doing it with another company, a blockchain company called Delphix. And it's a platform for trading security-based or debt-based assets and whatnot. So Same thing. These guys had this idea, outsourced the development of the technology. They stayed within the U.S. for the outsource of it. But again, there's a tech company, not one tech person working for it. So we, again, we're building a tech team here and rebuilding the platform from the ground up. And now people are doing that as a business, Terminal and others in town.
Terminal in town's a great success story of, you know, a landing pad for outside companies coming in. In terms of bringing them here, like what's your sales pitch? You walk into, you know, the boardroom and say, you know, besides the talent, right, pool that's here, do you talk about cost of living? Do you talk like, what's your sales pitch when you go into the
Yeah, all that. Really, you know what? The sales pitch is come to Waterloo. That's it.
Yeah.
Really. And in both cases, that's what we did, is we brought the founders who had the idea and had built it wherever they were in the U.S., Manhattan and Philadelphia. We brought them to Kitchwano and just toured them around to all the cool things that exist. And it sold itself. Like, now the exchange, the difference in the dollar helped.
Definitely.
You know, paying somebody in U.S. dollars in Manhattan is different than paying them in Waterloo region, because we do have a pretty good cost of living here still. Our homes are not like they are elsewhere in the world from a cost perspective, and it's a good, safe community. So really, the community sold itself. It wasn't a hard sell at all in both cases.
Hmm. So, and to that point, you know, the community is thriving. When you look back when you started, even take downtown Kitchener, for instance, like how has the tech community helped influence the community as a whole and really helped it thrive over the years?
I mean, it's huge. So I was sort of on the cusp, or I followed the curve of change, meaning, you know, when I was really young, we were an industrial based economy. Upton was industries, was where the School of Pharmacy is right now. We're looking, that was, you know, Epcon Industries. It was, you know, we were Kaufman, the corner here, where shoes being made still. Yeah. So I sort of watched the whole manufacturing, you know, kind of implode or slow down right at the time that the tech piece started to pick up. So I watched everything, you know, transform. You know, even the Lang Tannery building, I remember going in there when I was at the Accelerator Center in the early days. Tom Core was the CEO of the Accelerator Center at that time. And Lana Sherman, who was Caden, the developer that did the building, called Tom Core and I up and said, we come down and meet with me, just as they were sort of starting demolition. No construction yet. It was, and we went in that building and we sat down at a table and Lana pulled out all the drawings and told us what the vision was for that place. We walked out the back door and Tom Core said to me, so what do you think? I said, not a chance in hell. I'll never do it. You know, yeah. I consider myself to be a visionary. And I said, no way.
Yeah.
And then look what it is today. And then that's just one example. But that was really building out the tannery into the facility it is today, kind of started to push out all the rest of the area. And
that's exactly right.
Former pawn shops, you know, that Craig Beattie and Perimeter
doing,
So now you're starting to see the transformation of the entire core. And then that's led to, you know, the live, work, whole, live, work, and play mentality, which drives the residential towers and LRT. Although Ted Livingston, one of our biggest pipers in tech, tried to stop the LRT.
He did.
And that just,
I didn't know he was vocal about that.
Just about killed me. He was in the bath one day and he said, you know, it just hit me that LRT is not the right strategy for our community. And this is the 11th hour. So
was he looking for a Hyperloop or what did he want?
No, he just decided that, you know, we don't, this isn't the right thing that we should. So he decided that we should do a live, work, and play community on the North Campus of the University of Waterloo and just build places to live in and just have it in a little encapsulated
little bubble.
So Mike Murray, the CEO of the region, called me and he said, you know Ted Livingston well, though? And I said, yeah. So will you do me a favor and try to talk him off this ledge? Because anyway, so I called Ted up and he came to the Accelerator Center and met me. And I was in a suit and it was mid-July. And he said, I don't like meeting in boardroom. He was in shorts and sandals. I don't want to meet in a boardroom. Can we go for a walk? What I didn't realize is he's going to walk me around the whole 100 acres of the tech park and just about kill me. I thought about drinking water out of Columbia Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Got your steps that day, which is good.
Told me the vision of wanting to instead of having an LRT moving us around, you wanted to just keep it and confine it to one little area. But anyway, everybody's got different ideas.
Everybody's got a different opinion. I think it's going to be good for the longevity, like what we're aiming for, not tomorrow, but, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we can actually say, you know, we do have an LRT system. I think you're bang on. It's going to be the live, work, play scenario. The best way I describe kind of where we are, which we call Center Ice in the Innovation District, is almost like a Liberty Village type feel.
Exactly.
Right in Toronto,
exactly.
And people want to work here. They want to live here. You know, we're going to have over 5,000 people come to the downtown with Momentum's development and, you know, a couple of the other towers that we're looking out this window at. It's going to be an incredible feat. But you named it. Caden doing the tannery, I think, is the start of the pulse and really kind of situated itself in, you know, a place where, A, it's cool to be at, but also it kind of breeds that culture that you know, the creative juices started to flow. It's different office space than you're typically used to. And that's why Brick and Beam has been so popular for all these tech companies.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the sort of, we've seen tremendous change and growth over the last 10 years, you know, since I started at the Accelerator Center in 07. But I think the next 10, it's going to look like we had such a slow pace from 07 to 2018. And when you look ahead to 2028, it's just going to be.
What do you see happening?
Like more densification, you know, the LRT, you know, like you said, Todd, the LRT now, I mean, my kids might use it, but their kids are going to depend on it.
Absolutely.
You know, I think the generation that follows us will use it, but then the next generation, after that.
It's almost like the highway debate back in the day, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The whole expressway around the city. What do we need that for? Now, can you imagine our community without it?
No.
So I think, you know, the LRT is really going to impact that whole densification. You're going to see, our communities got smart. For the longest time, we did a really good job at growing startups and getting them to a certain point. And then we kind of pushed them out of our incubators and said, good luck with the mile missions and whatnot. Now, fortunately, we had some success with those companies. But what we've decided to do now is get behind them after they're out and get them what they need to be BlackBerries. Because what we've not created is another BlackBerry or OpenText yet. We're on that path, but we need to accelerate that path so that we truly have more, you know, billion-dollar companies here.
So what do you think that we are missing? Because we just cracked the top 20, right, in tech hubs in the world, but that teams us up with Toronto. So what do you think we need? You know, I think the best answer is probably a high-speed train going back and forth to Toronto, but is there anything else that you think we're missing?
Culture. We don't have any culture. We're trying. You know, I was on Creative Enterprise, which is an organization that was created through the Prosperity Council to try to change, you support artisans and create culture. We don't have the nightlife yet. We don't have that culture. We don't have, you know, those experiences that people will come here to experience. But we're going to get there.
We're getting there. Slowly. And I think you need the people downtown, right? The best example, I was just down in Austin. And you take a look at what they've done there. They've got obviously the music scene, the barbecue, but in the tech scene, you know, they base it off of that.
Yeah.
Right. So they kind of combine the culture with
you
tech.
You couldn't have picked a better example than Austin. We need to Austinize Waterloo region a little bit. We do, right? Like we are. I mean,
Dean's a pretty good singer, so we could probably get him to.
I can dance too.
But we did send some people, a team caught it to Austin and, you know, elsewhere, you know, in North America and beyond, to look at what are other places doing that we so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. So we're doing some of that now, but it just all takes time, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So getting down to the entrepreneur, you've done, you know, venture partners, you've done, seen everything from small to mid, like what's next on the horizon for you? Like next 5 years, what do you think you're going to tap into? I know 5 years is an eternity in the tech world, but what do you see yourself doing? You know, are you going to be sitting on additional boards because you love giving back? What do you see over the next five?
Yeah. You know what? One of the things that we need to do with some of our larger companies around here is bring a little bit more startup mentality to large companies. So corporate innovation, right? And Communitech's a great example. If you walk in the corporate innovation wing over there, you know, they've got TD Bank.
Canadian Tire.
They've got all these large corporations that are trying to think more like startups. So I'm working with a couple of large corporations now, ATS, you know, we talk about, you know, they're developing a corporate innovation strategy, thinking a little bit more like a startup, trying to come up with new novel, trying to disrupt their own markets rather than wait for somebody else to come in and disrupt their market.
You're not changing, you're dying.
Disrupt their own market. So I'm working in corporate innovation, trying to help some of that. Because the two worlds are so far apart, startup versus large corporations, trying to bridge that gap and bring them closer together and work together more. Cambridge is an area that I'm working in now, the whole Gaslight District, which is
Yeah, tell everybody a little bit about that.
Yeah, so HIP Developments, Scott Higgins, great guy, visionary, just like Craig Beattie here from Perimeter. It takes visionaries like that who can put the capital behind creating some of these new things. So Gaslight District is a two-block geographic area with brick and beam buildings. So the old South Forks Mall and then
Tiger Brand
Factory, which is where I'm doing a 25,000 square foot innovation center. That's meant more for kind of catering to the area, more manufacturing. So maybe less tech.
And more hardware,
more kind of, tangible advanced manufacturing, like ATSs of the world.
You got the School of Architecture down there too, so you'll probably have some links.
The college now has their applied research on the main floor of that building.
Beautiful.
So they took 20,000 square feet. So I'm trying to bring to Cambridge a little bit of what we did here in Waterloo region. Cambridge has sort of been, the ugly stepchild.
The forgotten son?
Yeah, the forgotten son's probably a better way to say it than the ugly stepchild. But, they really haven't got the attention. And I think it's time. And that's a beautiful area down
there. Oh, it's incredible.
Across the street.
I bring people from out of town where they come to the region. You show them KW. And then when we get down to Cambridge, the best way to put it is it's almost a European setting.
It is.
With the river bank, the beautiful churches.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you look 5 years down the road when there's two 24-story condo towers going in on the Gaslight District property.
That's sold out in
hours.
Yeah,
sold them out in hours. And so we're going to have the innovation center, so the white-collar job strategy, the live, the cool 24-story condo towers, and then the old Southworks Mall is going to be boutique eateries and no chains, wine shop, like really cool, courtyard. They've got this beautiful old ruined building in the middle of it that they're going to keep and put a glass cube over it and
love
do art installations all around this old ruins with lights shining inside at night so you can sit and have a glass of wine or cappuccino and look at the art. So we're really going in some really cool directions. And I think at the end of the day, if you look at me, I like to do things. Somebody said to me, a developer in town here said to me, "You'll never do it. It'll never work." It's kind of like the underdog situation.
You like the challenge.
I say, okay, let's try. So I do believe that we can create a cool environment down there. And I think we need it. And I think eventually the LRT will go there.
Yeah, phase two is planned to be there. So it's just connecting, again, the dots and making, it almost uniform. Making it one town, really, at the end of the day.
Exactly.
We've got three different cities within the region.
Exactly. And then I still help some startups. Delphex, I still work with Steve on some startup activity. And, I'll never really lose the startup roots. It's just,
it's in your blood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we'll wrap it up. Typically, we do some rapid fire for you. So we'll ask you a couple questions about, what you like to do in town and just quick answers, and we'll go from there.
Well, let's start, favorite spot to have a beer.
Favorite spot to have a beer here.
Thought this was going to be an easy one for you,
man. Yeah, I know. We never usually had a lot of choices. I'd probably say Beer Town.
Yeah. Beer Town?
And the reason is because I did a lot of cool business things that sort of came from there.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say Beer Town.
Phenomenal. Favorite restaurant in town?
I don't know the name of it, but there's a little Italian restaurant down on
King. At 271.
Yeah, that's right.
271 King.
What do you think is the most underrated restaurant? Maybe nobody knows about, but.
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah.
Do you know they're number one on TripAdvisor?
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Huge, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, number one in Kitchener. Z, one of the best fresh pasta guys ever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'd have to say that's the underrated.
There you go.
Okay.
Because I've been here all my life and I never heard of it, and it's a great little spot.
It's incredible.
Favorite spot to go to on the weekend?
It's not in the region. It's my cottage at Savo Beach.
There you go. 2 hours away?
2 hours away.
Yeah.
Lake Huron.
Slice of heaven.
Exactly. And I've got high-speed internet there so I can kind of take my life from here with me when I go there.
Awesome. Are you a book guy, a podcast guy?
Podcast.
Yeah. What are you listening to?
Everything's electronic. You know, I've been listening to a lot of corporate innovation podcasts lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then audio books, you know, cause I'm in my car a lot.
What's the latest audio book?
I'm in the middle of listening to an audio book on the art of negotiation, actually.
Okay.
I don't always listen to business books. I kind of go back and forth between empty books that really have no meaning and just fun to listen to. But then I go on a kick where I need to listen to educational stuff. So I'm on the art of negotiation one right now.
Brilliant.
Nice. One more. What's the most common characteristic in a successful startup CEO?
Passion.
Passion.
Mm-hmm. A passion, and Curtis McBride is a great example. Passionate, smart, listens, but you can have all that in some entrepreneurs that listen to everything you say and go replicate exactly what you said. Curtis McBride could always take it in his head, put his own ideas to it, and then come up with his own solution at the end of the day. You know, he wouldn't take what you said as a mentor verbatim and just go do it and then say, right, well, that didn't work. You know, he'd always, so passion and then that mix of their own ideas, their own intelligence, but willing to listen. Because there are lots of entrepreneurs that won't, they'll sit and pretend they're listening to everything you just said as a mentor and they don't listen to a thing you said. So it's that in between. I listen to everything you said, but I don't necessarily agree with they're going to do everything you said. I don't know how you put that into a word, but it is a characteristic that in every magnet forensics, Adam Belcher, same thing, brilliant guy. But he was in my office every morning at the Accelerator Center when he's getting ready to fundraise because he'd never fundraised before. Mm. So he took the ideas you gave him and put them with his. So I don't know, there's a DNA in there.
The ability to learn, but also create your own kind of spin on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It seems like what you do is very similar to like a coach in sports.
Yeah.
Are there any coaches that you look up to or like?
Joe Gibbs. Yeah. I love Joe Gibbs. I would have to say he's probably my favorite coach I obviously never met him or interacted with him, but I like the way that he coaches. He's hard when he needs to be hard. Yeah. I'll tell you, ClearPath Robotics wouldn't be here today if not for some pretty tough coaching at the Accelerator Center, because Matt Rendell was riding two horses at one point, and our guys actually yelled at him.
And look at that success story. For those that don't know.
So, you know, tough coaching, but being there and you know, I never I tried not to coach anybody to do anything that I wouldn't do myself, you know, and quite often when they were in turmoil, I remember when the lawsuit between Kik and BlackBerry came about, I was put myself right in the middle of it. Mm. You know, I could have tried to be completely out in the outside of it, but I put myself right in the middle of it because they were in it. You know, the best way to be a coach is to be in it with them.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. You're willing to fight for them. I can't thank you enough.
And whether it's right or wrong, you know, sometimes you're fighting for them to stop that, you know, but anyway. So.
Yeah, no, I can't thank you enough for your time today, sharing your stories. Yeah. I mean, I always enjoy our talks and I just, you know, it's incredible for you to share this for everybody to listen to.
Yeah, thank you.
So I really appreciate it.
That's great. Thanks,
Steve. Beautiful.
Thank you for listening to the Startups to Scaleups podcast with CBRE's Office Corridor Group. If you know of an incredible founder or tech influencer that should be showcased on our podcast, you can reach us on Instagram at Office Corridor Group or email todd.cooney@cbre.com. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe for more episodes and leave a review.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.